This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Novavax Vaccines. Essential protection for essential bonds.
Hi, welcome to the Dr. Courtney Show. I'm Dr. Courtney Campbell. For those of you who've tuned in, thanks again for coming back. For those of you the first time, this is just a wonderful discussion, a wonderful venue to celebrate all of the pet parents out there and all of the people in the pet industry who are working day in, day out in the trenches, doing the best they can for pets. So this is a great forum to discuss that. Like I said, my name is Courtney Campbell. You might see me as a host of Pet Talk on Nat Geo Wild. I'm a veterinarian. I practice in California. I have a focus on surgery and just an all-around pet lover. There are times where I forget to let people know how they can reach out to me. So let me put that in the beginning. That way we get that out of the way. I don't forget that. You could always reach out to me at Dr. Courtney DVM on Twitter, Instagram. It's totally fine. Any questions you have. I'm really pumped about today. I'm really excited because we've got a lot to get to today. We've got an absolute stellar guest joining me for this podcast. It's going to blow your mind. I'm so excited about that. And we're going to devote this entire podcast to one question only. And that question, I know millions of people are asking themselves right now. Now you say, well, that sounds like a little bit of hyperbole. How do you know that millions of people are asking themselves this question? Because we know that there are about 78 million dogs in this country right now and about 85 million cats in the United States. Now, some of them are not owned. Some of them are not in homes. They don't have pet parents right now, but that's how many animals there are. And there are more dogs in the United States than there are actually children. So we know that there are people out there asking themselves one very crucial question about pets. Now, the question that we were asking ourselves, and I had to ask myself growing up, was, what is the perfect pet? How do you find the perfect pet for your household? Now, I know that there are people who are pet parents right now, they have been previously, or they're currently thinking about it. Now, how do I know they're thinking about it? Because I get that question a lot, is like, hey, Dr. Campbell, how do I know what the best breed is for my household? How do I know what the best dog would be? Should I buy a dog? Should I go to the shelter? Should I adopt one? Older dog, younger dog? And then some of you are thinking right now, well, Dr. Courtney, there's more to inviting a pet into your home than just dogs and cats. And I couldn't agree with you more, because when I was growing up, my parents knew that having a pet was a huge responsibility. My mom's from the West Indies, my dad's from Connecticut, and they knew that even though we were calling and clamoring for a dog, they said, well, let's test out and see how responsible they actually are. So we actually had reptiles at first. We had Dashanti, who was a green animal, a green lizard. I'll never forget the look on my mom's face when we actually started bringing insects into the household to feed them. She's like, insects don't usually come in, but listen, let's get this all out of the way because we're joined today by an incredible guest. His name is Dr. Ernie Ward. He's established senior pet care guidelines to general veterinary practices all over the nation. He established drug monitoring guidelines. He's established extended vaccine protocols, one of the first and foremost innovators of that. He's a published author. He's been featured in over 30 media outlets, including Rachel Ray, NPR. I mean, and through all of that, he somehow finds a time to be a triathlete and do Ironman. So listen, he is, in a word, incredible. Dr. Ernie Ward joins us right now. Thanks, Dr. Ward, for joining the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Courtney. It's great to be here.
Oh, this is incredible. I'm so pumped and amped. I mean, you know, because you have been a champion for pets all throughout your entire career. One thing we do on this podcast is something called Set the Scene. So, Dr. Ward, do us a favor. Set the scene of a young Dr. Ward, and you're still young, growing up. And where did that passion for pets come from? What region of the country did you grow up in?
Yeah, that's a great question, Courtney, and good one to start with. I am from the South. I grew up in rural South Georgia. I was originally born in rural South Alabama, but I moved to South Georgia when I was a little child, as we like to say, knee-high to a grasshopper.
Of course.
You know, I was born with the gene. And I think that there are really two categories of people that come into the veterinary healthcare professions. There are those that are born with it. There's really, I never had this dilemma, this decision. It was just what I always knew I would do. And I think there's another cohort of individuals that sort of find their way here through a variety of experiences, college, high school, you know, a favorite pet or animal. But for me, it was just something I always wanted to do. There was a defining moment. I've written about it a lot. So if you guys Google around, you know, why did Dr. Ernie become a vet? You can read the story. But it really boils down to growing up on a farm and witnessing the death of my first dog, Taco. He was allegedly killing a neighboring farm's chickens, and so he was blasted with a 12-gauge shotgun.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, you know, that definitely catalyzed, crystallized, solidified my belief to, you know, that being a veterinarian was my my dream. And so here I am, you know, 25 years of clinical practice later, still fighting the good fight with people like you.
I did. Thanks so much for telling us that story, because I got to be honest with you, Dr. Ernie. I mean, we share that similarity. Through tragedy, we found hope. And through a sad situation, it reinvigorated our passion towards pets. My dog actually passed away, when I was 14, during whelping. Or for podcast listeners, that's, you know, delivering babies, delivering puppies. Because, you know, I was growing up, I didn't really understand that, you know, dogs need prenatal care just like humans. Dogs need regular checkups just like humans, especially during that time. And my dog should have been spayed when I was growing up. I mean, the bottom line is, so through our own lived experiences, it turned us into pretty fierce champions for pets all across the world and nation. So that's excellent. We share that.
And it's a big profession. And so, you know, there's plenty of room for all sorts of individuals. And, you know, I certainly encounter many colleagues who didn't discover they wanted to be a veterinarian or veterinary technician until they were well into adulthood. And then, you know, there are others with the stories like we have that from early, early childhood. So it's a great profession. And if you're listening today and you're thinking maybe, you know, this is something for me, the first thing to do is reach out to your local animal shelter and go and volunteer and actually, you know, get your hands dirty, so to speak, and learn what it's all about.
You know, there's so many people who, and I know that you and I could talk forever, you know, but we'll get back to the question of the day. But your point is so well stated, just because I know so many people who have a desire to be veterinarians or have a desire to be in the veterinary health profession, but they haven't seen the expansive nature of everything that's involved. They haven't done research. They haven't volunteered in a small animal veterinary facility. They've never been on a farm. And what I try to impress to young people or people aspiring within the industry is that there is so much in this pet world to enjoy, to have fun with, and so many different avenues that they can explore. It is not just being a veterinarian. I mean, there are so many other things that can be done.
Absolutely. It's almost limitless. And I think that that's sometimes the frustration we see amongst our professional colleagues. I think that many people sort of have a misperception about what working in veterinary healthcare is all about. You know, it's not all puppies and kittens and little foals. I mean, this is hard work. A lot of tragedy, as you mentioned earlier, and, you know, really you're many times feel underappreciated. So I think it's important that we celebrate the good things, and hopefully the listeners today will take that little bit of time, you know, to send a Facebook message or a tweet out to their favorite veterinary healthcare professionals and say thank you, because too often we don't get the thank yous. And it's a hard job, but I'll tell you, you know, if it's what you are meant to do and what you really are passionate about, you know, the tough stuff you tend to forget. And I really only remember the good.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. I may be wrong, but I believe yesterday was National Doctors Day. And so I just want to piggyback on that excellent suggestion. If you're celebrating National Doctors Day or National Nurses Day or National Healthcare Professionals Day, please don't forget about the veterinary profession. You mentioned it's not all just puppies and kittens. And I would agree with that, especially when you're inviting a pet into your home. There's more to having a pet than just puppies and kittens. Although I will be honest with you, I am partial to extremely cute dogs. So that is just advanced warning. But, you know, when we're thinking about inviting a pet into our house, there are people listening right now thinking, you know, I do want a pet. And I think that just as humans, and again, you please correct me if you disagree, but I think we're just drawn to life in general. We're just drawn to life And you can see that through various manifestations, whether it's having a fish tank in your house or having a young child in third grade who wants to bring the class gerbil home or class guinea pig. And then, of course, the adult who's living in the middle of the city who wants to be joined at home with their dog. So I guess my question to you is, when you're inviting a pet to your house, are there three main tips that you have if finding the perfect pet?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the first begins with your current state, your current lifestyle, your current abilities to bring that pet into your life. Because regardless of if it's a goldfish, a hamster, or a Great Dane, I mean, these all require complete reliance on us, and you've got to be able to give the time and the resources. And when we talk about time, that's really the first sort of barrier I want people to overcome. You know, what is the pet that makes sense for your daily schedule? I mean, if you're in a busy part of your life, you know, maybe in your 20s or your 30s, and you're working a lot, or you have an active social life, is it the right time for a cat or a dog? Maybe, maybe not, but just be aware that there are going to be, you know, specific time responsibilities. You have to walk and exercise your dog. Your cat needs that social interaction, or else.
Wait,
you know,
I'm sorry. So you're telling me I probably don't have to walk or exercise my goldfish? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying you don't have to walk them as much. That's for sure.
Okay,
the fins help them out.
But fair enough.
But regardless, it's that time. And I think that too often we get enamored by the cuteness, as you said, you know, because we're all suckers for those little bundles of fur. But if you don't have the time to commit, then don't bring it into your house. Or start out with something that, you know, such as a small mammal that maybe you can have limited interaction with. But time is of all the issues that I have with clients, it's typically the time. And that's, you know, you say, well, wait, what about the money? And what about, you know, having a backyard and all? That's right. But unless you have that space in your life that you're able to commit to them, all the rest of it doesn't count.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Your current status. One thing that pops into my head in regards to current status not only is time, but I also think about health and physical considerations. You've got people who have sometimes mobility issues, and I wonder if a small mammal, like you said, could be suitable for them as opposed to a Great Dane. And then you have individuals such as yourself who are triathletes, distance athletes. And so how much does your physical state, as you mentioned, how much of that influences the type of pet that you would invite into your house?
Yeah, huge, huge, and a great point. What I often encounter is we wind up seeing older adults. So now maybe the children are gone and, you know, there's no pet in the home anymore. The kids are at college or they've gone off to start their own lives, and they do what I call the default dog. They had a Labrador Retriever when kids were growing up. Okay, so the classic, you know, white picket fence sort of scenario. And so they go, I'm going to get a dog, and they default to that dog. And now they're 65, like you said, limited mobility. Maybe they want to start taking long vacations, whatever the issues may be. But so they go, I'm going to get a dog. A dog is a Labrador Retriever, and it's highly inappropriate because it's going to require extensive physical activity, interaction. It's a big dog to begin with. So you're right. The other part of this status and where you are is knowing what your physical and mental limitations are. And getting back to that, are you the type of person that wants to take a 2-week cruise? Well, that's great, but is it the right time to bring a dog or a cat into your life?
Right. Well, listen, when I was in practicing in LA, one of the things that people are really good at doing in Los Angeles is going on vacation. Okay. They're very good at that, and they take it very seriously. So we would see quite a few dogs and cats who would be in boarding or grooming facilities because their parents were going on vacation quite a bit. And so if that's part of your lifestyle, then that seems like something that has to be considered as well. Now, does that blend into your second tip for inviting a pet into your house? What would Dr. Ernie's second tip for finding the perfect pet be?
Yeah, first we go to time. Second, we go to resources. And resources being your yard, your apartment, your home, your financial situation. I mean,
big dog, you know, big bills. I couldn't agree with you more.
Absolutely.
I always say that.
Yeah, and it really frustrates me sometimes because if you're listening today and you have a dog or a cat, I mean, you already know what I'm telling you. It's, you know, there are going to be costs, and they're not just veterinary bills. I mean, it's food, it's boarding, it's toys, it's devices, it's taking them on a trip, it's grooming. I mean, there are a myriad of expenses. In fact, when we add it all up and we look at what's the total expenditure look like for a pet, it's less than a third your medical bills. So that means you've got 2/3 to 3/4 of all of your expenses are other things. And those other things add up quickly. In fact, last year, Americans spent over $68 billion on those other things. So just be aware that there is an expense. And that doesn't mean that that's a barrier, because obviously, you know, you can craft your own, you know, toys, and you can be really creative with diet and so forth. But the reality is you're going to have to be able to afford this stuff. And that's where, you know, we always start to talk about things like pet insurance. Does it make sense? And I would say, you know, this is a great conversation to have around the dinner table and look at what your finances look like. And, you know, if you can put away thousands of dollars in a banking account, savings account for your pet, medical emergency, that's great. But if not, you may want to look at things like pet insurance, because it could save your pet's life. So time, now resources. What does that backyard look like? You know, you mentioned these big dogs, big bills. Well, it also means big resource, big walking, big playing. Do you have a large yard? You know, because if you don't, maybe a larger dog might not be the right fit for you. I've certainly seen, you know, penthouse suite pets that have Great Danes, but it takes a lot of effort. So what does your actual, you know, apartment look like? You know, and people say, oh, I have an apartment that's perfect for a cat. Maybe, maybe not. In fact, I was recently counseling a young client, and she wanted a cat. She already had one, but she has 3 roommates in a 3-bedroom apartment. And I was like, wait a second. One is great and one is manageable, but two, now we've got inner cat dynamics. So sometimes not all cats get together and work out, but we've got to double the litter boxes. You know, we've got to make access for food and water. And you've got 2 other roommates who maybe aren't as cat crazy as you are. So again, look at all of those resources that are in your life. You know, do you have a car? Many people that live in big cities, you know, that can be an issue with just getting your pet to wherever you need to get it to, the groomer, the veterinarian, the dog park. Do you have access to transportation that allows your dog or cat?
That makes total sense, especially the resources aspect. You know, when you talk about that, I say big dog, big bills, but you're right. Even small dogs, just in terms of their level of grooming and level of care that they need, can require a significant financial commitment. I do a lot of surgery, and that's my focus. And I'll be honest with you, I see a ton of French bulldogs, and I get it, because they're so good looking and they're really, really cute. But if you're listening right now and you have an English bulldog or a French bulldog or any of those, you know, brachycephalic breeds, those smush face breeds, you know what I'm about to say. And that is, they are like sports cars. They need finely tuning every weekend. They either need a medicated bath, or they may need a procedure to help them breathe a little bit better, or they need some level of veterinary care, or some level of care that, unfortunately, some people when adopting them don't realize.
Yeah, and Courtney, that's a great point. And, you know, certainly we've used analogies like the sports cars for many of these types of at-risk breeds. But the reality, too, is if you're listening, don't expect that one surgery to correct the nares or the breathing, the upper airway breathing problems. Don't expect that one surgery to, you know, completely solve your upper palate, you know, your soft palate problems, because it's going to require, as Dr. Courtney said, some fine tuning. And typically these breeds are in there a lot for tuning.
Yeah, well, this is fantastic. Listen, I don't want to stop, but I actually have to. When we come back on the flip side, I want to talk to you about your 3rd tip to having a perfect pet. Will you stay with us?
You bet.
All right. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, 4 to be exact.
Joyce Deckard is the founder and director of Our Little Bit of Heaven, an animal rescue and sanctuary that is no-kill and canine-specific. Our Little Bit of Heaven takes in unwanted dogs, and we vet them, house them, and we take care of them so that they can find loving, adoptive homes and families. You can visit our website, bitofheaven.org, to learn more about our programs and ways that you can help us. We run 2 foster programs, including the Forever Foster Program, where you provide the home and we provide the supplies for your foster dog. We can also use help with medical and vet expenses, as well as with supplies to keep our dogs happy and healthy. We are also looking for foster homes so that our dogs can understand what a loving home feels like as they get ready for adoption. And of course, you can view our dozens of adoptable dogs at bitofheaven.org to add a new member to your family. No support is too small, and we are entirely funded by donations and fundraisers.
We wear fur and we're damn proud of it.
What?
And our four legs.
And our tail.
And we go to the bathroom outside. Well, we may not be too proud of that. Sniff around, then mark your spot right here. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
We're back, man. I'm just so pumped and excited about getting a chance to talk to Dr. Ernie Ward. He's joining us today. He's talking about his three perfect tips, or best tips, for getting the perfect pet into your household. So we've already talked a little bit about time, making sure that you understand your current status, whether it, you know, time status, your health status, and also talking about resources. And we're not just talking about finances here. We're talking about your environment and what environment that pet will be coming into. So it's not just, do you have the resources? Are those resources ideal for the pet that you're bringing in? We've crossed all species. We've talked about dogs, cats. We've even mentioned small mammals, which we absolutely cannot understate how happy they have made many pet parents out there. But now Dr. Ernie is going to transition to our third tip for finding the perfect pet. Dr. Ernie, what is your third tip for finding the perfect pet?
Yeah, and this was the tough one because this is the one that's not evidence-based. This isn't the one that I can sit here and show you a spreadsheet. This is the one that actually matters most, but sometimes, you know, we don't even talk about it because it's so ambiguous, and that is the magic. You know, people often say, what's my favorite pet? And that's an impossible question to answer because, you know, some people are dog people, some are cat people, some are goldfish people, some are horse people. I mean, what is that magical connection that you get whenever you are in the contact with these other species? You know, like for me, if you put me in a room with a dog or a cat, really doesn't matter because I'm kind of an equal opportunity lover, you know, it just makes my day. I just get a charge, a jolt, you know, it just makes my blood pressure drop, my cortisol evaporate. I feel better.
I think you just created a new hashtag, equal opportunity lover, man. So that's fantastic.
But then there are other species that, you know, while I may love and admire and respect, I don't get the same magic, that same connection. And that's where people have to sit down and really look at, you know, what is happening there. There is love at first sight. I think many times, you know, those of us that work in the shelter community can tell you sometimes we're nervous around that because, you know, if you're going to adopt or get any type of animal, I have a 2-date minimum rule. And that is, you know, 2 dates. So you go to the shelter the first time, that magic hits you. That's great. But we've all been there on those first dates back in college or high school where that was the love of your life. This is the person you're going to spend the rest of your days with. And then the next date, you're like, maybe not so much. So right. That second date is really what I impress upon, you know, potential prospective pet owners to go back and see that. But that magic still is there. And you know who you are. If you're listening today, you probably already said, I'm a cat person. Yeah, I totally get what he's saying with the dogs. Whatever you are, you know what you are. And that's the part that I can't, you know, I don't even try to interfere with that. I mean, I have people bring to me a wide variety of pets, you know, and the bird people, right? I mean, you know, they come in and I've always struggled with my relationships with birds. Like I respect the species, love the species, you know, and quite frankly, I'm pretty good at dealing with the medical aspects of that species, but it doesn't give me that magic.
You know what, Dr. Ernie, you will have, especially for the talking birds, you will have 80 years to develop that magic between them, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people realize that when they get these birds, especially the parrots and the birds that can talk, they live a long time.
Yeah, so follow your magic, you know, follow your passion when it comes to selecting that perfect pet. And you know, don't even let people sway you. You know you're a cat person, you know you're a dog person, you know you're a bird or a horse or whatever person. You know, that should be the foundation, and then you look at your time, then you look at your resources, and then you let the magic happen.
And now, unfortunately, I want to talk to you about something that's a little bit tragic, and that is relinquishment. And when it just doesn't work out, you get a pet parent who well-intentioned, they want to do the right thing, and you know, for some reason, it's just not a good fit. We know, you know, depending upon the resources that the source that you read, about 20% of pets are relinquished or brought back to the shelter. I guess my question to you, Dr. Ernie, is in your experience, what is the single biggest factor that leads to it just not working out?
Yeah, it's the love at first sight. It's not taking the time to do the due diligence to come back for the second date. It's that impulse adoption. That's really where I see most of the problems. They take this cute, cuddly, warm, loving furball home, and then 3 months later, you know, it's got gnashing teeth and it smells bad and it's, you know, urinating on the rug. And they're not prepared for that. They're not prepared for time. They don't have the resources. And quite frankly, the magic has already dissipated. So for me, you know, when I look at why do dogs and cats wind up back in the shelter, you know, back in the foster system, it's typically because somebody did make a bit of a rushed decision. I find the people that are a little more due diligent, you know, that take their time, you know, they wind up landing and making the right decision. However, there also is one other cohort that we need to talk about, and that is, you know, there are pets that just, you know, for whatever reason, they don't work out in your home. Just like, you know, some people, we just can't get along with them. It's just not going to fit. Even though we've done everything possible to prepare and make the right decision, it still doesn't work out. And that's, you know, you should not feel guilty for that, but you should now really take a vested interest in making sure that pet is placed in a proper, you know, home. Because I think too often, if we view them as a disposable commodity, just something we can literally flush down the drain, forget about, then we've really missed the whole point of the relationship, of the magic, you know, of the, you know, I would argue a spiritual, you know, emotional connection. So just make sure that you understand going into it, this is a commitment for life. You address it like that from the beginning. You say, this is a 20-year commitment to this dog or cat. This is an 80-year commitment for this macaw. You know, whatever that may be, but you say, that's how we're going to address it. And then if things start to go sideways, you really, really work hard. And then if they still flip over, you know, you wind up saying, okay, look, it's not going to work out for me, but I'm darn sure going to make sure that I make sure this pet's cared for.
No, I love that. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I love the way that you describe the relationship that we have, that human-animal bond, because I actually describe it and I use the exact same word, which is magic, because, you know, obviously when we meet somebody, we can connect with them or not immediately connect with them because we kind of know it. We know that they're the same species. It's a human being, but technically interacting with a different species, we don't speak the same language. We have a totally different set of instincts. You can make an argument that technically we're not even supposed to get along, but we do, and we live in harmony, and dogs and cats love us, and other pets love us. And that, I think, is the true nature and the true magic of that human-animal bond, is that we're speaking a totally different language, but yet we understand each other. And I think that the way that you put it is absolutely perfect. One last thing, and listen, I want to keep you, but I know you got to go. I wanted to ask you about one critical factor, and that is patience. I find that when you adopt a new pet into your household, you may not see their true personality for at least a few months. And I've heard this many times. It's that, you know, when I first adopted my dog, he just seemed so nervous and I wasn't sure. And then after a while, it's like he came out of his shell. Would you advocate that as well to new pet parents out there, that just give the dog or cat or whatever pet that you're bringing in, just give him time?
Absolutely. And you have to be aware that there are developmental stages that your dog or cat or horse or bird is going through that are normal and natural. And so while we would like to sometimes hurry things along and say, wow, you know, come on, dog, get potty trained quickly, or cat, you know, why are you still having accidents in the house? I mean, whatever those issues are, remember, it does take time. Personality is shaped over, you know, quite frankly, not even months, but years. And just look back at the pets that you've shared your life with in the past, and you kind of probably had a different relationship at year 1 or 5 than you did at month 3 or 4. So just be aware that, again, personality is shaped with experiences, it's shaped over time, and it's certainly shaped largely by our love and interaction.
Oh, time and our love and interaction. This is perfect. Dr. Ernie, listen, I feel like I could talk to you forever, and I know we could, you know, you're fantastic. I know we share that.
I want to leave your listeners with one quick tip, though, when you are considering bringing this perfect pet into your lifestyle, and that is the routine. You need to establish rituals, daily, you know, sort of timelines of what they can expect, because the one thing that animals differ from humans is they're not really good at surprises. And when you throw a surprise in there, like suddenly we change where you were feeding you or what time we were feeding you or when we go to for a walk or what, they don't do well, because this is confusing to them from an evolutionary standpoint, because they're like, wait, is this a threat? Is this going to change the way I should be eating or drinking or interacting? So really, before you get to that step of bringing that pet in, make sure you've got that time to devote to the rituals, to the routine, that you actually have a plan. Now you've got those resources. Then the magic really can happen. But the importance of a daily routine, especially with dogs and cats and horses, cannot be understated. So that's the last little tip I want to leave your listeners with today. And that is routine and rituals count, and they will really help you bond with your pet in a much more meaningful fashion.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ernie. I mean, listen, I think we covered so much ground, but I know anybody who's listening today, they know that and they've heard some really key information, and it's going to really help guide them when they're thinking about adding a pet to their house.
Yeah, and thanks for all you do, Dr. Courtney, because the more we can educate the pet-loving public, you know, the three-quarters almost of over two-thirds of the U.S. homes have pets, the more we can educate them on how to be better stewards for their pets' care, the better those pets are going to be. So thank you for all you're doing.
Oh, man, I appreciate you so much. Please, you know, listen, I had so much fun today. You know, would you mind coming back for a future podcast?
Man, I'd love to.
Awesome, man. Thanks again, and we'll talk soon. This is perfect.
Thanks.
Wow. Well, there you have it. That was Dr. Ernie Ward. Fantastic to talk to him. I mean, just a font of information. We covered a lot of ground, you know, the three tips, you know, to finding that perfect pet. And of course, we could probably generate 10 tips, but he did an awesome job just boiling it down. I mean, listen, he talked about time, the resources, and that magic. He even delved into that two-date requirement, you know, and then the routine. And I agree with you, you know, dogs, they just, and cats and pets, they just have that internal chronometer, that clock, and they know what's happening every single second of the day. And so you got to keep it consistent. But what I love the most is that he talked about the intersectionality between those three tips. So it's not just, do you have the time? Do you have the resources? Do you have that magic? He's saying, think about your time and how that interacts with your resources so you can find the magic. And then with that magic, you can actually develop the routine. So I love that. And one thing I cannot, you know, I didn't want to belabor the point, but I talk about this all the time. Definitely have a conversation about veterinary pet insurance. It changes the calculus and the dynamic when your pet's experiencing a health emergency or health crisis or just regular wellness appointments, and you realize that there is an expense component involved. So definitely something to think about. Wow, we could talk about this forever, but we've got to go, and I appreciate everybody for joining. Please join us for the next podcast. We're going to be talking to more amazing people like Dr. Ernie Ward. Just wait till you see who we have on our lineup. Until then, keep in mind, there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond. Talk to you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.